And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is a Ken Hudnall show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting in the country. Well, today is May 31st, and it's the 151st day of the year. 214 days remain till the year's over with. War still rages in Europe. Depending on who you talk to, Putin is dead. Got 3 years to live, got cancer, got whatever you want to call it. And the Russian people are not happy. They removed the limitations on age. So if you're 95 years old and carry a rifle, he can put you in the field. Which would be a kind of a counterpart to the photographs I've seen of little old ladies in Ukraine with AK-47 stopping Russian convoys. Well, on this day in 455, Emperor Petronius Maximus is stoned to death by an angry mob while fleeing Rome. 1223, the Mongol invasion of the Cumans. Battle of the Khalkha River. Mongol armies of Chinggis Khan, led by Subutai, defeat Kievan Rus and Cumans. 1293, the Mongol invasion of Java was a punitive expedition against King Kirtanagara of Shinghasari, who refused to pay tribute to the Yuan and maimed one of its ministers. However, the Mongols, for the one of the few times in their history, failed. It's regarded as the establishment of the city of Surabaya. 1578, King Henry III lays the first stone of the Pont Neuf, New Bridge, the oldest bridge of Paris, France. 1669, citing poor eyesight as his reason, Samuel Pepys records the last event in his diary on this date. 1775, American Revolution. Mecklenburg resolves are adopted in the province of North Carolina. The so-called Mecklenburg Declaration actually had one of my ancestors as a signer. 1790, Manuel Quimper explores the Straits of Juan de Fuca. 1790, the U.S. enacts its first copyright statute, the Copyright Act of 1790. 1795, French Revolution. French and Spanish forces begin the assault against British forces occupying Diamond Rock in Martinique. 1813, in Australia, William Lawson, Gregory Blackson, and William Wentworth reach Mount Blaxland, effectively marking the end of a route across the Blue Mountains. 1859, clock tower at the House of Parliament, which houses Big Ben, starts keeping time. 1862, American Civil War, the Peninsula Campaign. Confederate forces under Joseph Johnston and G.W. Smith engage Union forces under George Lee McClellan outside the Confederate capital of Richmond, Virginia, and were victorious. McClellan was a phenomenal trainer. Wasn't much as a tactical commander, though. He eventually got replaced. 1864, American Civil War, Overland Campaign, Battle of Cold Harbor. Army of Northern Virginia engages the Army of the Potomac. 1879, Gilmore's Garden in New York City is renamed Madison Square Garden by William Henry Vanderbilt. It's open to the public at 26th Street and Madison Avenue. 1884, the arrival at Plymouth of Taheo, King of Moraz, to claim the protection of Queen Victoria, took place on this date. 1889, Johnstown flood. Over 2,200 people die after a dam fails and sends a 60-foot wall of water over the town of Johnstown, Pennsylvania. 1902, Second Boer War. Treaty of Vereeniging ends the war and ensures British control of South Africa. 1909, the National Negro Committee, forerunner of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, convenes for the first time on this date. 1910, the South Africa Act comes into force, establishing the Union of South Africa. 1911, RMS Titanic is launched in Belfast, Northern Ireland. 1911, President for Life of Mexico, Porfirio Diaz, flees the country during the Mexican Revolution. 1916, whatever Mexico earned in the way of income, it's estimated half of it went into his pocket. 1916, World War I, Battle of Jutland. The British Grand Fleet engages the High Seas Fleet in the largest naval battle of the war, which proves indecisive. That's where 1921, the Tulsa Race Massacre kills at least 39, but other estimates of black fatalities vary from 55 to over 300. 1935, a 7.7 earthquake destroys Quetta in modern-day Pakistan, killing 40,000 people. 1941, Anglo-Iraqi War. The UK completes the reoccupation of Iraq and returns Abdul al-Illah to power as regent for Faisal II. 1942, World War II, Imperial Japanese Navy midget submarines begin a series of attacks on Sydney, Australia. Midget submarines had one or two crew, carried two or three torpedoes, and frankly, they could be quite deadly. 1947, Ferenc Nagy, the democratically elected Prime Minister of Hungary, resigns from office after blackmail from the Hungarian Communist Party accused him of being part of a plot against the state. This gives the communists effective control of the Hungarian government that they kept for quite a number of years. 1951, the Uniform Code of Military Justice takes effect as a legal system of the U.S. Armed Forces. 1955, the Supreme Court expands on its Brown v. Board of Education decision by ordering district courts and school districts to enforce educational desegregation at all deliberate speed. 1961, South African Constitution 1961 becomes effective, creating the Republic of South Africa, which remains outside the Commonwealth of Nations till June 1, 1994, when South Africa is returned to Commonwealth membership. Also in 1961, in Moscow City Court, the Rakotov-Fabishenko show trial begins, despite the Khrushchev thaw to reverse Stalinist elements in Soviet society. 1962, the West Indies Federation dissolves. 1970, 7.9 Ancash earthquake shakes Peru with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 8, which is considered severe, and a landslide buries the town of Yungay in Peru. Between 66,794 and 70,000 are killed and 50,000 are injured. 1971, in accordance with the Uniform Monday Holiday Act passed by Congress in 1968, Observation Memorial Day occurs on the last Monday in May for the first time, rather than on traditional Memorial Day of May 30th. 1973, U.S. Senate votes to cut off funding for the bombing of Khmer Rouge targets within Cambodia, hastening the end of the Cambodian Civil War. Another case of untrained civilians taking control of military operations. 1977, a trans-Alaska pipeline system is completed. 1985, U.S.-Canada tornado outbreak. 41 tornadoes hit Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, and Ontario. 76 are killed. 1991, Basisa Accords in Angola lay out a transition to multi-party democracy under the supervision of the United Nations UNAVEM2 peacekeeping mission. 2005, Vanity Fair reveals that Mark Felt was Deep Throat. Now, for the Deep Throat, if you remember, was the individual who made a lot of revelations about Watergate. He was an American law enforcement officer who worked for the FBI from 42 to 73. He was a FBI special agent, eventually rose to the position of associate director, the Bureau's second highest ranking post. Worked in several FBI field offices prior to his promotion to the Bureau's headquarters. 1980, he was convicted of having violated the civil rights of people thought to be associated with members of the Weather Underground, ordering FBI agents to break into their homes and search the premises as part of an attempt to prevent bombings. Had to pay a fine, but was pardoned by President Reagan during his appeal. In 2005, at the age of 91, he revealed to Vanity Fair magazine during his tenure as associate director of the FBI, he'd been the notorious anonymous source known as Deep Throat. who gave Woodward and Bernstein critical information about the Watergate scandal. And this led directly to the resignation of President Nixon in 1974. Even Nixon suspected he was deep throat, but it remained a secret for over 30 years. He finally acknowledged his identity after being persuaded by his daughter to reveal the truth before he died. He published two memoirs, The FBI Pyramid in 1979 and G-Man's Life in 2006. 2012, the FBI released his personnel file covering the period 41 to 78. Well, it comes down to a question of who can you trust? 2008, Usain Bolt breaks the world record for the 100-meter sprint with a wind legal 9.72 seconds. 2010, Israeli Shayatet 13 commandos boarded the Gaza Freedom Flotilla while still in international waters trying to break the ongoing blockade of the Gaza Strip. 9 Turkish citizens on the flotilla were killed in the ensuing violent affray. In 2013, the asteroid 1998 QE2 and its moon make their closest approach to Earth for the next 200 years. Also in 2013, on this date, a record-breaking 2.6-mile-wide tornado strikes El Reno, Oklahoma, causing 8 fatalities and over 150 injuries. 2016, Syrian Civil War. Syrian Democratic Forces launched the Manbij offensive in order to capture the city of Manbij from the Islamic State of Iraq and Levant. 2017, a car bomb explodes in a crowded intersection in Kabul near the German embassy during rush hour. 90 are killed and 463 are injured. 2019, a shooting occurs inside a municipal building at Virginia Beach, Virginia. 13 people are killed, including the shooter. 4 others are injured. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Anniversary of the Royal Brunei Malay Regiment in Brunei. Christian Feast Day. Camilla Battista di Verano. Hermias Petronella. Visitation of Mary in Western Christianity. The beginning of Gwaidayak. The Dayaks are in Sarawak, Malaysia, and West Kalimantan in Indonesia. And World No Tobacco Day internationally. Now that wasn't good. Well, I hate it when he does that. Okay, let's see what else we've got. There we go. 1279 BC, Rameses II, also known as Rameses the Great, becomes pharaoh of ancient Egypt, part of the 19th dynasty. 1578, Martin Frobisher sails from Harwich, England to Frobisher Bay in Canada. Eventually mines fool's gold, famously used to pave the streets of London. 1902, the Boer War ends, Treaty of Unity is signed, Britain annexes Transvaal. 1910, the Union of South Africa declares its independence from the UK. In the year 70, Rome captures the first wall of the city of Jerusalem. In 1223, the Battle of Kalka River. Mongol forces led by Jibai and Subadai defeat a Russian alliance after feigning their retreat, led to the death of 20,000 Russians. 1417, Jacoba Bavaria becomes Countess of Holland, Zeeland, Wingauen. 1495, Emperor Maximilian, Pope Alexander VI, Milan, King Ferdinand, Isabella, and Venice signed the Anti-French Saint League. 1531, the Women's Revolt in Amsterdam. The royal house in the churchyard is aborted. 1621, Francis Bacon is imprisoned in the Tower of London for one night. He was a statesman and a philosopher. And there are many who say he wrote works credited to Shakespeare. 1634, the colony of Massachusetts Bay annexes Maine colony. 1659, the Netherlands, England, and France sign the Treaty of The Hague. 1665, Jerusalem's Rabbi Jabtai Tsawi proclaims himself Messiah. 1696, John Salomons elected chief of St. Eustace. 1759, the province of Pennsylvania bans all theater productions. 1821, the Cathedral of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the first Catholic cathedral in the U.S., is dedicated in Baltimore. Designed by Benjamin Henry Latrobe. 1837, the Astor Hotel opens in New York City. Later becomes the Waldorf Astoria. Been there many times. Supposedly, in the sub-basement is a special subway station designed just for Astor. And it's got works of art still hanging on the wall, according to some folks I knew who explored it. 1859, Philadelphia A's organized to play what was called town ball. Became baseball 20 years later. 1861, General P.T. Beauregard is given command of Confederate Alexandria Line. 1861, the Mint in New Orleans is closed. Taken over by the Confederates, and they issued their own money. 1868, the first Memorial Day parade held in Ironton, Ohio. 1868, Dr. James Moore from the UK wins the first recorded bicycle race. It was 2 kilometers. A velocipede race at Parc de Fed de St. Cloud in Paris. 1870, Congress passes the first Enforcement Act dealing with the rights of blacks. 1870, E.J. DeSmed patents asphalt pavement. 1875, Reciprocity Treaty between the U.S. and Hawaii is ratified. 1878, the German battleship SMS Grosser Kurfürst sinks. 284 are killed. 1878, Congress accepts a decrease in dollar circulation. Those didn't hurt their pocketbook. What do they care? 1879, the first electric railway at Berlin Trades Expedition. 1879, Madison Square Garden, which I talked about earlier, was actually named after the first president, James Madison. 1880, the League of American Wheelmen, the first U.S. bicycle association, forms in Newport, Rhode Island. 1883, the French fleet under Pierre begins the siege of Tamatave in Madagascar. 1884, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg patents flaked cereal so that we could have our cornflakes. 1890, Minster in Germany, the tallest church in the world. The steeple is 161.5 meters high. It's finally completed. It was begun in 1377. 1893, Whitcomb Judson of Chicago patents a hookless fastening. It's called a zipper. 1893, the remains of Jefferson Davis is moved from New Orleans and reinterred at Hollywood Cemetery in Richmond, Virginia. That was based on his widow's request. 1899, Bronx acquires Creech Memorial Park. 1900, British troops under Lord Roberts occupy Johannesburg. 1900, Piet de Law captures Lieutenant Colonel B.E. Spraggs of the 13th Battalion, Irish Imperial Yeomanry. 1900 also saw U.S. troops arriving in Beijing, helping put down the Boxer Rebellion. 1902, labor trouble and riots lead Spanish King Alfonso XII to impose martial law. 1906, an assassination attempt on King Alfonso XIII and Victoria of Battenberg in Madrid during the procession of their marriage in Madrid by a Catalan anarchist kills 30 people. 1907, taxis first begin running in New York City. 1908, Miss Pottlesburg de la Potterie is the first airplane passenger in Belgium. 1910, Glenn Curtis flies from Albany to New York City. 1912, saw U.S. Marines land in Cuba. 1913, the 17th Amendment about direct election of senators is declared ratified. 1915, an LZ-38 Zeppelin makes an air raid on London. 1916. Now, at the Battle of Jutland in 1916 that I talked about, the largest naval battle of World War I between the British Grand Fleet and the German High Seas Fleet, killed 8,645 people. And it was an inconclusive victory, but it was a strategic British victory because after that, the German fleet never put to sea again during World War I. Also in that battle, the British battle cruiser HMS Invincible explodes. Only 6 crew members survive. 1919, NC-4 aircraft commanded by A.C. Reed completes the first crossing of the Atlantic. 1923, China and Russia and the USSR exchange diplomats. The next year, China recognizes the USSR. 1926, Portuguese President Bernardino Macedo resigns after a coup. 1930, the building began on the Albert Canal in Belgium. 1937, German warships bombard Almeria in Spain. Also in 40, Major General Bernard Montgomery leaves Dunkirk. Had the Germans gotten him, the war might have come out differently. 1941, a Luftwaffe air raid in Dublin, in neutral Ireland, claims 38 lives. In 42, the Luftwaffe bombs Canterbury, England. In 42, U-boats sink and damage 146 Allied ships. In the month of May, that's 722,666 tons. In 1943, the Archie comic strip is first broadcast on radio. 1943, in the month of May, 42 U-boats were sunk by the Allies that 1 month. 1 month. Alrighty. I think on that note... 1961, Arthur Michael Ramsay appointed the 100th Archbishop of Canterbury. Alrighty. Well, we've been talking about a lot of strange and off-the-wall things. And now, we're going to talk about some more. Maybe. Alrighty, we'll do this instead. You know, there have been a lot of strange encounters in wooded areas. In November 2014, volunteer searchers looked for a person who had vanished while out hiking. This was the 4-year anniversary of the hiker's disappearance, and not a single clue reported. And with the extensive and intensive searches that went on by people who knew the area well, it was just absolutely mystifying. In April 2011, CBC reported, Canadian Broadcasting Company, no trace of a man missing 30 days in the Everglades Park. His name was Roger Sawyer from Oregon. He absolutely vanished. Last seen March 5th, disappeared while on a family camping trip in a national park. Now, Roger Sawyer vanished as the group came near the end of a cross-country trip in their motorhome. Sawyer, who was a retired butcher, was an experienced outdoorsman. But the search had to be ended because absolutely no clue was found. In an interview with CBS Miami, the missing man's daughter-in-law, Janice Williams, said, Roger, his wife, and I were in a motorhome together, and we took the motorhome through the Keys. They arrived in the Everglades National Park. According to his daughter-in-law, some of the family members went to the visitor center while Sawyer and his wife, Paula, remained behind. But at the time of his disappearance, he and his wife were in different areas of the campground. As darkness fell, they all headed back to the motorhomes, but Sawyer was not to be seen. Wasn't inside his motorhome. Park officials were called, and along with Miami-Dade Fire Rescue, a search for him was initiated. It continued for 10 days, but at the end of that time, not a single trace of him had been found. They didn't find a shoe, a hat, footprint, nothing. Eventually, the family members had no choice but to return home without him. They have no idea what happened or how a man in perfect health with an outdoors background could vanish without a trace in a national park. Park Service did a stellar job, and according to Williams, that's the daughter-in-law, they covered every square inch of the park, found not one single clue. One of the searchers told newspapers, I was there from the first to long after the last day. And every day there were 3 to 5 dog teams, ground searchers, park rangers,
Two or three helicopters flew nonstop, but the man simply vanished. Well, in the 1980s in the Yorkshire Dales National Park of Northern England, a retired policeman had a very unsettling experience as well. December 1st, 1987, retired policeman Philip Spencer set out for a walk across the Winslep Ilkley Moors in early hours of the morning. Took with him a camera in the hopes of photographing the strange lights that had been reported in the area. As well as it being dark, the moor was swirling with mist, and Mr. Spencer doubted he'd get any pictures at all, despite having loaded his camera with ultra-light-sensitive film. Suddenly, to his immense surprise, he spotted a human-like creature ahead of him in the gloom. Clicked the camera and duly photographed one of the most talked-about photographs in the history of unexplained phenomena. And although it's blurred, the photograph appears to show a humanoid figure about a meter high. Bears an uncanny resemblance to the grays of UFO legend. Spencer claimed he ran after the creature and entered a dome-shaped craft that rose rapidly into the sky before he could get a shot of the craft. He remained adamant. He had seen an alien and he donated that photo to UFO watchers. Analysis carried out at the Kodak Laboratories in Himmel Hempstead suggested the picture had not been interfered with in any way. But a later computer analysis of the photograph by U.S. Navy expert Dr. Bruce McAbee was inconclusive. When the retired policeman took the photograph on the moors of that strange human-looking creature and saw the craft, he believed the incident lasted merely a couple of minutes. But when he reached his father-in-law's house in the village, his intended destination, he saw the village clock was an hour fast, or at least he thought it was. It appeared he had actually lost some time. It was this that led him to suspect something else had happened to him after seeing that strange figure on the gloomy moors. He suspected it was possibly he'd actually been abducted. In fact, he would later claim he had indeed been abducted by an alien craft. As he walked across the moor that morning, he had with him a compass to help him find his way. And through the gloomy fog, he saw the strange-looking being ahead of him on the slopes of the moor. Intrigued and too surprised to feel any fear, he found himself running toward it, trying to get closer and make out what it was. And that was when he realized it was a flying craft of some sort with a dome on top of it, rising up from the moor. It disappeared from sight within seconds, though, and the unidentified creature was gone as well. Hung around for some time, hoping that both would return so he could figure out what it was he had just witnessed, but neither did, and so he went to the village. He discovered his compass was now useless. It was pointing south instead of north. When he got to the village, his watch set a different time than the village clock. He had lost an entire hour of time. The photograph Spencer took was first analyzed by a wildlife expert. He concluded whatever was in the photograph was not any known animal. And there was no way to ascertain that the creature in the photo, what the creature in the photo was. It was dark and quite blurry given the conditions of that morning, and the analysis of the image in the photo concluded that strange figure hadn't been superimposed or added later on. And indeed, the photo itself hadn't been tampered with at all. After this odd encounter, the policeman began to experience strange dreams at night. This led him to undergo hypnotic regression organized through the researcher Peter Howell to try to get to the bottom of whatever had happened to him out on the moor. Dr. Jim Singleton conducted the session. Surprisingly, it seemed that from Spencer's recall, his encounter with the creature came after his abduction. Indeed, in his words, the creature's waving goodbye to him when he took that immortal photo. While on the craft, he says he was given a tour, taken up into orbit, shown videos, one of which depicted a coming apocalypse, and the other he wouldn't reveal, saying he knew he wasn't allowed to disclose what was in the other one. Researcher Peter Howell asked a psychologist to assess the retired policeman. A psychologist apparently verified, in his opinion, the man appeared to be telling the truth. According to what came out of the hypno-regression session, Spencer said he's walking along the moor, windy, and there are a lot of clouds, walking up towards some trees. He sees something, can't tell. He's green and moving toward me, and I can't move. Creature's still coming toward me. I'm stuck, and everything's gone fuzzy. Feel like I'm floating in the air. I want to get down. I can't get down. Don't like it. But this green thing is out in front of him. Later said the creature was in front of him and below him, and it was like the creature was a child pulling a balloon on a string. Spencer was saying, I want to get down. There's a big silver saucer thing. There's a door in it. I don't want to go in there. Everything's gone black, and suddenly I'm in a funny room. I hear a voice saying, don't be afraid. And he said, at that point, I stopped feeling afraid. There's a beam above me, a fluorescent tube. I don't want to look at it. My nose feels funny. I can see a door, and there's one of those green creatures motioning for me to go with him. He said, I don't want to go with him, but I didn't seem to be able to help myself. He said, I'm a big round room. I'm on a raised platform. He says, I got nothing to fear, but I'd still like to go home. He said, it's got such big hands. It's so bright. He said, two of the creatures had approached him. Looked at pictures on the wall, scenes of destruction like on the news, people starving, it's not nice. Pictures change, another film, he's asking if I understand, I'm not supposed to tell anybody about the other film. He said it's time to go and suddenly everything's black. He said the next thing I know I'm walking up the moor again near some trees. I see something, a creature. I've shouted to it, I don't know what it is, it's moving quick, I photographed it. I'm running after it, it's got big eyes and pointed ears. Hadn't got a nose. His hands are enormous. Three big fingers. The arms are long. Looks odd. Funny feet. V-shaped. Two toes. One crucial fact came out of his regression, though. The only problem that had existed with the photo, other than, of course, an inability to identify what the thing was in the photo, was that the light condition seemed to imply the photograph hadn't been taken at the time in the early morning that Spencer said he had taken it. That had been a problem for the investigators. That was until his hypno-regression session revealed he had, in fact, taken the photo after he had been taken aboard the craft. So it was an hour or so later than he thought. And this now matched the lighting conditions that day, later in the morning on the moor. And to Hal, this was more verification the policeman was indeed being truthful in his account. In fact, the policeman's account never wavered or varied. He didn't seek publicity, nor did he seek any financial gain from his experience. So had it simply been a fern or a shrub or a tree stump capturing the early morning light, throwing shapes and made it appear to be a creature as opposed to an inanimate feature of the landscape? Could have been a hoax, utilizing a stage prop such as a mannequin. The wildlife experts and film experts had all insisted it was a genuine but inexplicable photo. And why would a sensible policeman, no doubt a rational and logical kind of person, wish to jeopardize his career and his reputation by becoming a laughingstock to skeptics? Spencer was a policeman with a solid background and a solid reputation whose story never changed. The Daily Star newspaper in 1989 said they exposed the photo and debunked it, saying that the unidentified creature had in fact been an insurance broker riding a bicycle who had no idea he was being photographed as he cut across the moors while visiting a client who lived on the edge of the moor. Luckily, Peter Howe and Jenny Randall was able to track down the source of this rather silly interpretation. Somebody had given this possible explanation actually as a joke to his colleagues in the newsroom, and the newspaper ran with it and simply printed the joke as a debunking explanation. And while it was imaginative, it was proved to be incorrect. When the photo was enhanced, no man on a bicycle carrying a briefcase could be seen. It still looked exactly like what it was, an unknown creature. According to veteran investigator Jenny Randalls, the story of Mr. Spencer's encounter and subsequent abduction didn't end on the moor. A few weeks later, Spencer heard a knock on his door. When he opened it, he found two men standing on the doorstep. They both dressed in black, and they asked to come in and told him they were from the Ministry of Defense. Spencer was a little surprised at this, as he certainly hadn't told the Ministry of Defense anything. On entering his living room, one of the men looked at his electric fire and asked him how it worked. And then they announced he had come to talk with him about the incident on the moor. Well, this was surprising to Spencer, as he had only told three people about what he had experienced that early morning on the moor. And the three people he had told had no connection whatsoever to the Ministry of Defense. But these two men in black appeared to know all the details about it. He wasn't sure what to say to him, but he thought that given they were saying they were from the government, he ought to just be honest, so he gave him a short account of his experience and said he had taken a photo. At this, the two men in black appeared themselves to be surprised. It would seem that they had not actually known about the photo. When they discovered that a photograph existed, they were quick to ask for it. But Spencer explained it wasn't in his possession, rather it was with a friend. Now, he didn't want to give it to him, so he didn't really tell him the truth. And strangely, the two men seemed to lose interest in questioning him anymore and got up to leave. After this visit, the investigator Spencer was working with Howe contacted the Ministry of Defense and the Air Force to inquire about who those two men had been. Gave the names of two men had given to Spencer, but was told that no such men existed in the military. That makes Spencer's story all the more interesting, and that 7 years early, on the 16th of June, 1980, a short way away on the Ickley Moor near Todd Morton, a 56-year-old coal miner named Zygmunt Adamski was found dead, lying on top of a pile of coal over 20 miles from his home in Tingley with an ointment covering a wound which no lab could identify. According to the coroner, he died of fright. The Ickley Moor itself also has the second highest concentration of ancient carved stones in Europe. They're believed to date back to the late Neolithic period, and the most famous one is the swastika-shaped stone at Woodhouse Crag on the northern tip of the moor. And there's a small stone circle known as the Twelve Apostles. Now, Steve Jones of the West York Pagan Meetup Group says he saw a 7-foot-tall green-hooded entity along with a smaller black entity. Author and prehistorian Paul Bennett of the Northern Antiquarian Group, who studies and investigates prehistoric remains in the British Isles from the Mesolithic times, also wrote of a very strange experience he had among the Mesolithic stones of Black Stone Circle on the moor. Now, these stones are hard to find, camouflaged by newer drywall stones and overgrown grass and bracken. And since the discovery of the site, most likely used as a religious meeting point for the people of that civilization, a number of bizarre psychophysical anomalies have been experienced by more and more people. According to Bennett, among many of which people were formerly highly skeptical of the existence of any supernatural phenomena, but they learned their lesson. July 1989, he and a friend were spending a few days by the ancient stones to record any electromagnetic anomalies there. While there, something very untoward raised his peculiar head. About midnight, as we sat, there was suddenly appeared from nowhere a host of figures walking slowly around the site. He said, I couldn't discern any physical features other than height and humanoid shape. He said, I closed my eyes, knocked my head against the walling, shook my head, it into a thing. The figures were still in front of us, winding in and out of the stone very slowly, but surely ever so gradually speeding up. He said, this went on for about 25 minutes, and by now all they could see was a blur and a remarkable vortex that was created in the wake of their dance. Is this possibly an explanation for the existence of vortexes and entrances to other dimensions? Nobody really knows. The spinning vortex of silhouettes seemed to get faster and faster until it appeared to reach a sort of critical speed. And as this critical state occurred, what was now a rapid spinning blur simply vanished right before their eyes, as if someone had flicked a switch. But at the same moment the blurred vortex disappeared, several straight lines of orange and red appeared in their place. Now, this was as baffling as the dance they just witnessed. Thin, wavering lines of what he can only describe as subtle light bouncing off the stones. Now, these lines didn't originate from the circle, but appeared to come from further afield. One in particular seemed to come from the direction of the Idol Rock, the great boulder to the east, and continued past in the direction of the swastika stone. Eventually, the lights faded back to wherever they came from, leaving them both wondering what the hell they just experienced. Several minutes after talking it over, he got up and walked into the circle. Now, this was a warm July night, but a tremendous shiver hit right through his body, as almost if he walked into a freezer. On his third step, he collapsed onto his knees. More than anything that night, that perturbed him. On another occasion at that location, a ritual invocation of its spirit nature brought forth a number of glowing red spheres of light about the size of footballs. They vanished only to reappear yards away. These were obviously living things, examining them as they were examining the lights. On one visit at night, as they approached the stones, it was as if they had walked through an invisible gate or door just yards before the circle itself, and they had the distinct impression they weren't wanted there. They returned again, discovered overnight the temperature inside the stones and the variance of temperature outside them, about to 10 degrees Fahrenheit. And this was not the end of the anomaly. What happened next bends the parameters of reality. What they didn't know was that a friend of theirs, well-known British ritual chaos magician Phil Hine, at home in Leeds an hour or so away,
also experienced something rather strange that night. He had a friend over that night who suddenly announced that a black amorphous shape was lurking in the stairwell. The ritual magician asked his friend, also a magic practitioner, to open his mind to the entity so he could allow his mind to be used by the entity to speak with Hines. According to Hines, the possessing entity declared, "I have come from the ancient hills." Said he had been awakened recently due to activity around the ancient site. Said he had come to give the magician power, although it wouldn't say what the power was for and the exact nature of the power. When the magician asked the entity what would happen if he refused the offer, the entity was said to have replied it would return screaming to the hills. Gave its name, although the magician says it's possible this name could have come from the mind of his friends through which the entity was being channeled. When the entity took its leave, the magician's friend was left with personality displacement and motor spasms and had to be cleansed with a banishing ritual. Unbeknownst to him at the time, two of his friends had a strange encounter at Blackstone Circle. Seems strange on reflection that the appearance of the entity seems to relate to their experience. In Blackstone Circles, dowsers have also spoken of picking up imps, while the moor itself is also known for apparitions, including the Bargoos and the Black Dog sightings. According to the Telegraph and Argus newspaper in 2011, a mystery body lay undiscovered on the moor near Ickley for over 10 years. Human remains discovered on a desolate moor 8 years ago by a walker have still to be identified. A Bradford inquest was due to hear the facts. The man's body had been found on Rumbald's Moor in November 2003. It's believed the mystery man could have been dead for up to 10 years, but no cause has been found. Also in North Yorkshire, England, Mark Ashe wrote he was camping in the North York Moors National Park with his group, the East Yorkshire Survival Group Hull, with friends Paul Dory, Raimondo, and Gary Richardson. He said, "Me and a few friends are seasoned bushcrafters. We've spent most of our lives in the forest practicing and teaching bushcraft. I spent many nights alone in forests and slept easy. One weekend in the Wycombe Forest in 2014. Now, Wycombe Forest, being in the Northern York Moor National Park near Scarborough, England, consists of mainly pine and other conifers. According to what Mark Ashe said, he decided to drive up and meet his friends. By the time he got there, they'd left camp and gone for a walk, so he decided to get a fire going, make a brew, and practice a bit of archery while they got back. First thing he noticed was that the place was unusually quiet. He couldn't hear a single bird. Not dead silent, but a lot quieter than usual. And he said before he started, he'd like to state that he spent many years in the woods, and sometimes branches moving in the corner of your eye can catch your eye. But this is something to get used to. He said while he was making the fire, he caught a glimpse of a person in the distance walking between the trees, so he looked up expecting to see his friends, but there was nobody there. A few seconds later, he saw it again. The definite shape of a human being walking between the trees just to vanish behind him. And this went on for at least 5 hours. Felt like he was surrounded, being observed, but he still wasn't afraid. He just got the feeling like he might not be welcome or he might be trespassing. He said when his friends got back, it was still daylight. Talking to his friend, he noticed he kept looking over his shoulder, and he asked him if he was seeing people walking by the trees, and he said, yeah. He said he'd been seeing them for a while, too. As it started to get dark, one of his friends said he saw a black shape jump over a mound and walk towards him. After he looked up, there was nobody there. A few minutes later, he screamed like a baby. Said somebody grabbed hold of his collar and pulled, said he could feel the knuckles on his neck. They all felt a bit uneasy that night. The only way you can describe the atmosphere is that we weren't allowed there, but they'll leave him alone. Thinks if they spent another night there, something would have happened, though. Location where we set up camps about 100 yards from a Bronze Age burial mound called the Three Tremblers. According to Historic England, a public body who looks after England's historic environments, these burial mounds are what's known as round barrows and are funerary monuments dating from the late Neolithic period to the late Bronze Age, with most examples belonging to the period 2400 to 1500 B.C. They were constructed as earthen mounds, which were sometimes ditched, which covered single or multiple burials. They can be found in isolation or in groups as cemeteries and often act as a focus of burials. When asked if, when Mark was asked, did you get the feeling they were related to the burial mounds? Do you think they were spirits? He said, it's hard to explain. The place had an ancient feeling, hard to put into words. He said they were being observed by shadows that felt ancient. They also got the feeling afterwards they might have been seeing us as shadows as well, like two different time periods existing at the same time. They didn't feel danger, but felt like they were trespassing, if that makes sense. So Mark was asked, when you saw the figure in the daylight before it got dark, did they have features or were they just black figures? And he said they had no features. Oh, I do remember what's looking like. One looked like it had a hood across its shoulders. Literally like catching a glimpse of somebody walking past a tree and never appear on the other side. Just weird. They've all spent nights in forest for years. All slept in the forest alone too, but none of them ever experienced anything like that. Well, you know, sometimes people actually get enough information. They put up YouTube videos about it. One gentleman runs a YouTube channel called A Box of Monsters, and he sent a notification that some of the researchers should take a look at his videos. They may help explain what people are experiencing. Wanted them to watch one video filmed on location by James Rink at a remote cabin in 2003 in Nevy County, Florida. He said, I started coming back up here about 6 months ago. Been away for 2 years after I had the encounter with the red glowing eyed entities. But it's hunting season, and his buddy Angelo, he's a hunter who taught him to get back in on there hunting. So they go up there with his two brothers, Sandy, who's 36, and Eric. Now, they wanted to get to bed early, like around 10 p.m., so he sat there reading his book because they were going to get up around 5:30 when the sun comes up. He said, there's a phenomenon out there that you might ought to take a look at. Some folks might be aware of it, and I think this is all connected to it because I've had several encounters up here, and I'm going to group the thing with the red eyes into it. He said he had an entity who was trying to lead him away from the cabin. He said he was without a handgun. There's something that's going on. It happened all over the world. Missing people. There are folks disappear from national parks in mysterious circumstances. Big-time hunters go hunting with bow and arrow. Guys with GPSs who are experienced at trail finding their way back, and they're never seen again. They're missing. Bloodhounds are brought in. Searches are conducted for weeks and weeks, but nothing is ever found. So at this point, he's sitting in the cabin. It's about 2 in the morning. He's still wide awake reading his book. All of a sudden, he felt like a sort of energy came into the cabin. He says it feels like his whole face is like somebody's putting putty in his face, inside his face, and he knows what it feels like when you're tired and falling asleep. But this was like it was just knocking him out. Well, his book fell against his chest, and the next thing what woke him up was Sandy. Was sleeping in the middle of the cabin on a cot, and he immediately said something on his cot, and the cot squeaks metal against metal. He said, I picked up my book and started reading again where I left off, and his back is arched perfectly. He's just sitting there for like 5 minutes without moving, and couldn't figure out what was going on, and he rubs his face hard 3 times and grabs his boots. He's having trouble putting his boots on, and then suddenly he put them on with military precision, not even looking. Looking straight ahead. Gets to the door. Screen door is tied shut with a rope and he can't open it. He's pushing on it and pushing on it. And the narrator speaks to him and he won't answer. Now Angelo woke up and looking at him and says, Sandy, wake up. And doesn't answer. So he walk over to him, grab by the shoulders, and he turns around and takes a swing at him. And the narrator said, what's the matter? And he says, they're calling me. And he calls to Eric, but he's still asleep. And he says, there it is again. They're calling me. Sammy, come here. Who's calling you? He was asked. There's nobody there. I've been awake all night. He says, there it goes again. I have to go. At that point, he's looking through the screen door and still tied with the rope. And the narrator says, there's nobody calling you. Nobody's calling you from those woods. Go back and lay down. What are you doing, sleepwalking? He says, no, because for the next 10 minutes, he's
sitting down on the bunk, still wanting to get back up because somebody's calling his name in the woods. Now, nobody else heard it, just him. Now, the next morning at breakfast, at 5 in the morning, Angelo caught him trying to go back out again through the door. This time the door was barricaded with all the luggage against the door because Angelo and the narrator were worried about him, wandering off. Told Angelo something wasn't right about this and didn't want him going out the door in a trance and falling off the deck. So they put him back to bed, but at 5 a.m. did the same thing again. Next day, after they had done the hunting, it was around noon, they came back for breakfast, and Sammy had no recollection of what had happened the night before. And this wasn't the only strange incident he'd been involved in. What happened to him, the narrator, years ago, around 2006. Something was looking for him, calling his name, yelling at him. Had teardrop eyes, looked like the alien grays with big black eyes, but they were glowing pink and looked like illuminated from the inside. Now, at this point, we've run out of time for today's show. And I'll go into more detail on this particular little encounter, if you will. But for now, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.